Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So tell us all about it, dropping them off. This rite of passage, how long did you linger? How embarrassed did you make him?
Well, first of all, my kids don't like what clothes I wear. It was the first thing I realized. They were begging me to change my outfit. They're like, please don't wear what you're wearing. You can't wear red pants with a purple top. So that started the day out. But no, it was sad because. But then I think everybody goes through it. Mike Scott's been through it. Everyone's going to go through it. Maybe you someday, Dan.
I went to college.
Yeah. No, I meant drop children off at college.
They don't have to be mine.
Okay.
That's true.
All right, next year you could take Eli to college.
Yeah, sure.
And see, so he was like, no, it's fine, but his dorm room's not ready. So now he's living in a hotel, and then we had to store his stuff.
What?
His dorm room's not ready.
A hotel paid for at...
By Georgia Tech. And guess where he's staying?
Texas.
The nicest hotel in Georgia. I don't want to disclose which one it is.
No, sure. You keep him at an undisclosed location, obviously. You don't want the paparazzi.
Give him an alias. But it's a 5-star hotel where he's staying. So that's lovely living. But his real dorm room, and Mike, you'd appreciate this. I went in there because it's not ready yet. There were two dead cockroaches in there. And the bathroom was just, I mean, I've seen prison bathrooms that were better looking.
What's a dorm for guys?
I know.
I mean, it's like a prison. It should be like it should be Spartan.
Right, but it
especially
was
college.
It has high, so we're trying to be positive. We're like, oh, well, it has really high ceilings. You have a nice view. But at least, and I said, at least the cockroaches weren't alive. They were dead. But they've got a lot of work to do. I don't think they're going to be done in a week. What they're doing, the first floor of Woodruff South, that's the dorm he's moving into, used to be offices. So now they're converting it to dorm rooms. So they have to take the old furniture out, put the new furniture in and beds, and I just don't think it's going to be ready.
Any horror stories about dropping your kids off at college or having to listen to people tell stories about said? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-360A, turnkey.pro.
I try not to cry, but it – and I actually think that Andrew or Eli or Peyton was –
Which
more,
one?
It's hard to keep track of them.
He was more upset about saying goodbye to Bubba. He cried saying goodbye to Bubba. And then when I left, he's like, okay, Mom.
Yeah, right. Let's move it along.
But he had a moment with Bubba Bear. He's like, big Bubba Bear, I'm going to miss you. And I was so sad. But, you know.
Yeah.
But one thing that I did, so when I was driving back, because I had a lot of time on my hands, my friend's daughter is going to U of I. And the two of the three professors so far that she's having are going to Zoom in. They're not teaching in person. Can you imagine all the money? And they're still continuing this bull jive, you know, out of. She's not vaccinated, so this professor can't interact with people. You know, it's like we've created this monster in Illinois, and it's not going to stop. But I think if you're paying that much money, that the professor should be in the classroom or in the lecture hall teaching
the kids. Get off your soapbox. We're only interested in you dropping your kid
off
at college.
All right, do you want to see pictures? It's so sad.
I'm imagining Dan's dad slid you a 20 and said, good luck taking Metro to Northwestern.
Yeah.
Right?
No.
No tears.
No, your mom and dad dropped you off, what was it like?
Dropped me off. I mean, I went to
he found his own way.
Well, they still had to drop you.
No.
I mean, you have stuff.
No, I had a car, a caddy that made money.
Okay. Oh, so you had a car and they let you park at Northwestern?
Yeah.
You got a little parking pass as a freshman?
Yeah. Of course.
Bloody tuts.
I drove up there.
And you said,
it's a 45-minute drive. What's the big deal? we're leaving.
Well,
okay, I'll see you, you know.
For lunch on Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly.
But there was no tears when you left?
No.
I don't do tears. No, I don't do tears.
Mike, what about when you went to school?
I did not drop Jeremy. I was here when Jeremy got dropped off. I was at work. So Melissa dropped
real
him
man, off. Man, making the money.
There
well, what
go.
About any of your kids? Didn't you drop any of your kids off?
No, I've never dropped any of my kids off first day. I moved Pete. This was the first year I moved Pete into his apartment at SLU.
Okay.
This year. But, yeah, it's not that big a deal for once you've done it a few times. It's just not that big of a deal. It's more of a hassle.
Again, and it's so
totally.
It's an expensive hassle.
Yeah, it is an expensive hassle.
I mean, the gas money I spent was and any time I saw it, like I saw 314, I would pull over and just fill up the tank, even though I really didn't need gas.
I'd outsource it. Like I had somebody drive my dog down to Florida. I mean, it's the same concept. Here's $800. Take my kid down there, and you know, you figure it out.
Honestly, you can do that. You can store your stuff, your kid's stuff.
Yeah.
If you're from out of town, like at SLU, you can store your kid's stuff in a storage, and you can have a facilities management group pick it up, bring it to your kid's dorm, bring it up, spread it out.
What? You know, I'm surprised this hasn't improved, this process. Like, why don't you do you know, like people, how they responded to the pandemic, and they got in the neighborhood, they did like these little school consortiums. Like, get a bunch of Georgia Tech parents together. You know, rent a big luxury bus. Uh-huh. You know, they take care of all this, the in and out stuff. You can pack all the stuff in there, and you just take a nice trip across country.
Well,
I have to go
back to help him set up his room, whenever that's going to be.
Why does he need your help to set up his room? You're just looking for ways to be back there, and he's like, I think so. What does he have? A desk, a dresser?
No, he's going to have a dresser, a desk,
yeah,
a closet. One of those stand-up closets.
Yeah.
And a bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the setup? Well, and did you meet his roommate and his roommate?
I love his roommate. Yeah. He's from.
How did he feel about that?
So I got to spend a lot of time with him because we were waiting for the hotel to open up, you know, for them to go in and check in. And his name's Zach, and he's from a very small conservative town in northwestern Georgia up in the mountains.
Yeah.
And he's on our team.
Yeah, good.
He's on our team, definitely.
So keep Peyton on the straight and narrow.
He's a Brian Kemp fan. He's we talked about Mar-a-Lago, what was going on there. We had some very long discussions. I like him. That's his roommate. The other mate is the Sang Chow. He's from China.
I don't think you need the painful Family Guy quality accent on the Asian name.
What am
name.
I supposed to say? His name's Sang Chow.
Yeah,
that's his name.
Same Sang Chow. You could say like an American.
Okay. Did I just say like an American?
Yeah. But,
well, it's hard. All right,
say like a regular white person.
I haven't seen him yet, but he's from China. I don't know what part of China. And then this other guy, I don't know who he is.
Okay.
I haven't met him. But wait till they see the bathroom. So Zach's family.
Wait, so there's four?
There's four. So it's two and two, and they share a bathroom.
And is it two it's bunk beds in a single room?
No, bunk beds.
Oh, boy, luxury.
Yeah, well, I would refrain from using the word luxury. And there were some ceiling tiles that were hanging down that had some mold on them. I'm like, oh, this is really not what I expected. 312-642-5600, Turnkey Depro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Dennis from Crystal Lake, I'm guessing that when you went to college, we use that in the same way we talk about politicians who have to go to college for a little while, like in Northwest Indiana for a 2-4 stint. Am I right, Dennis?
Yes, Dan. It wasn't really college. I was looking at a 1-year stint at 17 years old down in St. Charles.
I knew I was close.
The judge gave me a break. 10 days later, I'm up at 4 o'clock in the morning with my mother. She takes out 2 cans of tuna, throws it on a plate, throws cottage cheese on a plate.
Mm-hmm.
That was my breakfast. And I took the CTA bus all the way downtown to the Met station, and I was in Orlando, Florida, about 10 hours later.
Yeah.
That's a real Southwest Side man's way to get there.
Yeah. All right, Dennis.
I don't need mommy.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. He's not a mom wears the meatloaf kind of guy. Yeah.
Well, and the worst part is when you go home and then you go in their bedroom and it's empty. And then watching the kitchen is just empty. There's no cooking noises. No
memories. Misty watercolor memories light the corners of your mind. Yeah,
yeah,
no,
but
I
think
got it.
Russell or Eli's going to miss him a lot, too, because that's his best friend.
Yeah, know? No, I get that. Yeah.
That's the biggest part.
Yeah. But they talked yesterday, and I completely was eavesdropping.
So is he going to go to Georgia Tech now? No. Does Eli want to follow him to Georgia Tech?
I don't know. It's very it's less expensive
for mom. Less expensive for mom and dad.
It's tougher to kick in the they're in the SEC. Wait,
no, they're ACC.
No, they're ACC.
They're still ACC
basketball,
football,
yeah,
though.
Still,
yeah,
still ACC football.
Yeah,
yeah.
And tougher to kick there. But here, real quick. So I was listening to those two talking yesterday, and Angie said, "Dude, you don't know. This is awesome here. You have no idea how much fun this is. I can't wait for you to go to college." So that was good to hear. But also, too, classes haven't started yet. This is rush week. And he already's been to the Pike House three times.
Mm-hmm. How many times did you go to the Pike House?
I went, okay, stop. I didn't go to the party, okay?
She set an Iowa record, I think.
No, I did go to the Sigma Chi.
I'm talking about Georgia Tech. I'm talking about her career.
I want him to be a Sigma Chi at Georgia Tech or a Beta. We went to those houses.
Okay, Mrs. Robinson, take it easy.
Well, no, no, it's, you know, but it's his decision. He said, well, thanks, Mom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or maybe not at all. Because there are advantages to not doing it. There may be some advantages to
true.
Doing it.
I mean, if it's grade suffer, then bye-bye fraternity.
Tell him to be a GDI.
Yeah.
Yeah, buck
that's
the trend.
Not going to happen.
Bob in Buffalo Grove.
Good morning, Amy and Dan. Congratulations, Amy, getting your son off to the dorm. With regards to rules, I'll date myself. I just was wondering what any unusual rules or if they've changed. When I was in college, we didn't have TV sets. We couldn't get this. No women were allowed in the men's dorm. Mm-hmm. And
now who can tell?
Of course, that rule was broken. They kept it quiet. But in fact, I was an assistant RA a couple of years.
We all saw Animal House, Bob.
I didn't report.
We know your story.
And then cooking. That was violated on a few of the dorm floors, especially by the foreign students who had to have their special food. Let's see, what else was there? So I'm just wondering what kind of rules, you know, that they have right now with regards to the dorm life.
Well,
I would assume you can have a computer in your room now so you can watch TV on your computer.
Oh, yeah.
There's only one.
Yeah, thanks,
you can watch TV on your computer. Cooking, yeah, there's a kitchenette down the hall, so you can use that. But the whole thing with girls, they have girls that live across the hall from them.
Yeah.
I lived in an all-girls dorm, so I like that, actually, because I felt safer there. I wanted a safe space, dude.
The sexes should be separated. The sexes should be separated everywhere in all walks of life.
No. I think if your first floor could be guys, second floor could be girls, third floor could be guys, but now they're all mixed up. So.
Just two rules.
They're mathletes, the girls there, I'll tell you that. They're not athletes. They're mathletes.
The girls that live across from Peyton.
Yeah. Well, all the girls that I saw at Georgia Tech.
They're all mathletes.
They're smart girls.
All the co-eds are mathletes at Georgia Tech. Really.
There's 8 sororities and 30 fraternities. So it's really guy to girl. I mean, it's like 1 girl to 4 guys there. I think we're looking at Georgia State.
Stiff competition.
Spelman College, like what's around Atlanta?
He does have the cooking thing, so that may give him a leg up.
Yeah.
There you go.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook or read about it in the paper. Hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So, I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Dan and Amy, so yesterday we learned, last night actually, John Solomon's reporting, he's the first I saw over at justthenews.com, that the FBI essentially admitted to what Trump was suggesting they did, which is over gather Trump property or documents that were in Trump's possession, in addition to other documents that are Trump's property, like his passport, over-collected during the raid. Oh. Broad search warrant. We saw the top line of it on Friday. We talked a little bit about it yesterday. Of course, we haven't got the affidavit that makes the case that the probable cause to issue the warrant had been met. That would be nice to see. But, of course, the Justice Department is saying to disclose the affidavit that details their case for probable cause would jeopardize the investigation. So we can't see that. We just have to trust them.
And you know, they want to expose possible witnesses. That's what they said, too.
John Solomon on with Hannity last night explaining what the FBI is now conceding.
Yeah, listen, for the first time, we have confirmation that the FBI and the Justice Department believes it over-collected evidence when it was at Mar-a-Lago, meaning it collected evidence that was not covered by the search warrant. Tonight, I have confirmed from two different sources that the Justice Department called President Trump's defense lawyers today, confirming that they did take his three passports. They are making arrangements to send it back, saying they are obligated to return it because it's outside the scope of the subpoena. They have also informed the Trump defense lawyers, the Justice Department has, over the last few days, that there's likely privileged materials that the FBI collected that now has to be segregated and returned to the president. Those privileges could be attorney-client privilege or, more likely, executive privilege. Now, this is remarkable. I talked to a lot of FBI people today who told me this warrant was already remarkably broad. They basically go in and get anything that looked like a presidential record. To then collect something like a passport, which most agents can recognize pretty quickly, or privileged documents, raised concerns among career FBI officials. You're going to see some of them quoted in my story tomorrow about just how this raid was conducted and the sort of lack of precision that was carried out during this raid.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line, and that information comes as we are told by... Well, the Wall Street Journal, among other outlets, that Merrick Garland reflected for weeks on this decision to greenlight the raid at Mar-a-Lago, or, you know, greenlight applying for the search warrant to legitimize the raid, at least in a court's eyes, if not the public, pained over it for weeks, suggesting there was some deep consideration here. Yeah, he didn't do this lightly. Pained over for weeks. Wait a second. I thought this was a crisis. I thought that there was a sense
eminent
of urgency.
Danger.
Yeah, that we had to get this. We had to do it this way because there was the prospect that classified information could be destroyed. And yet he had weeks to ponder this weighty decision. So which is it?
And real quick, back to the passports, the three passports that Trump says were taken. One was expired. They're saying this morning that those items have now been returned, those three passports.
Okay.
Although, why'd you take them in the first place?
Well, yeah. Just,
I mean, I'm just...
Just, right, just put a dragnet over everything
yeah.
and pull it out the front door. That's essentially what they did. Okay. But it speaks to this conversation we keep having about, government bureaucracies general, including law enforcement ones and including the FBI. The intersection between bad faith and incompetence. You know, it's hard to always separate the two. Sometimes it's a combination that you see playing out together. And, of course, the left is in full crisis comms for the FBI. It's really something to watch, isn't it? The left running around... heaping moral scorn on anyone who would question the sterling reputation of the FBI?
Do they not know what they've done?
This is really takes it to another level for me. Peter Strzok, one of the lovebirds. Peter Strzok on Morning Joe telling America that, you know, of course you should trust the FBI. Peter Strzok telling you to trust the FBI. Hey, Peter.
Was his girlfriend with him?
Have you read the Inspector General report on you during your time at the FBI?
Well, Joe, absolutely the American public should trust what the FBI is doing. You know, what's funny is I think back the year and a half that I spent with the team looking at Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server, there was no concern. There was no outrage on behalf of any Republican as we used search warrants, as we went out and did a very invasive investigation to try and get to the bottom of what she did or didn't do. So it's not that the FBI is targeting any one side or the other. What you see is the FBI going out on a day-in, day-out basis, objectively investigating allegations of law. It just so happens that the only thing that tends to come up in the right-wing ecosphere, whether in the media or on the Hill or from President Trump, are those things where they take a personal affront because it directly impacts them. There's absolute silence when the FBI is investigating former Secretary Clinton. There's absolute silence when the FBI is doing things that isn't targeting them. So I think this is a one-sided narrative that has been developed and amplified, particularly by President Trump.
It's a real convincing argument that Peter Strzok makes. Hey, the FBI plays it down the middle and you should trust them. Don't listen to the right-wing sphere and the one-sided narrative of right-wing media. That sounds like a guy who's very even-handed. That's a guy just calling balls and strikes.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You can also reach out to us on our text line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. So does he have a contract with MSNBC, Peter Strzok?
I don't know.
Oh, my God. But he was on the same team as Hillary Clinton. So why would, you know, if you're investigating something that you believe in, you're not going to be that persnickety about information.
Well, first of all.
You're going to be biased.
First of all, the idea that there are only complaints lodged about the FBI's performance as it relates to Trump is patently false. How many cases have we talked about just in the last several years? We're talking about the Whitmer case. We're talking about, this is under-remembered, we're talking about the FBI raiding James O'Keefe's home because they believed him to be in possession of Hunter Biden's...
Laptop, was it?
No, no, or, the diary.
That's right, the diary that was left...
The daughter's diary.
Yes, got it.
Joe Biden's daughter's diary. In addition to Larry Nassar. I mean,
and Parkland, Florida, they dropped the ball big time on that kid. Mass murderer.
We've talked about this with respect to over the years, including the first part of this century. First decade, at least, when Islamo-fascist terrorism was a preeminent concern here, and the FBI's effectiveness in interdicting that violence. We've talked about it with their attack on parents who attend school board meetings to address their elected officials. And are characterized as, you know, potential domestic terrorists, effectively. So much so that you had school boards around this country, school board associations at the state level, more than a dozen, that withdrew from the National School Board Association over their collaboration with the Department of Justice to characterize parents in their school districts like I've just described. Another example. That it's just about Trump and only about Trump and the people around Trump. That's just untrue. The record of the FBI over the last 30 years, there have been, you know, many successes, I'm sure. And we could talk about the Unabomber, for example, and so on and so forth. Well, complicated investigation, I understand. Yeah, the reign of terror of the Unabomber went out for almost two decades. But still, they got him. Great. Wonderful. We talked to Jim Fitzgerald, who was the profiler involved in the case. You know, good agent, great job.
And there are
wonderful.
A lot of good agents.
And we're happy, yeah, of course. And we're happy to highlight the success stories. But the idea you just paper over these high-profile, catastrophic failures in and you know that have to do with politics and don't have to do with politics.
Yeah, 17 kids died at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School because the FBI failed to act on several tips about the gunman, and they settled for $123 million with the parents. But I'm sure the parents would much rather have their kids back.
In addition to that, with respect to Strzok and his whole Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump comparison, the point, Peter, is equal treatment. Equal treatment are two investigations that cover very similar issues being handled very similarly. And the answer is no. I'm sorry, did Merrick Garland come out and say, well, or do you think he's going to at some point? We're just going to chalk it up to mishandling, like James Comey offered for Hillary Clinton because he didn't want to go after Hillary Clinton. And I'm sure the DOJ didn't either. It's equal treatment. Part of equal protection under the law is equal treatment before law enforcement. And that's not happening. And it's irrefutable. And Peter Strzok is a disingenuous, smug disgrace to his former employer, the FBI, which is why he fits perfectly as part of the cast of Morning Joe. Stephen Rozelle, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I think the reason the FBI should be defunded is because it doesn't add any value. If I was on a jury now, I would want the FBI to give me an independent third-party assessment of their information, whereas in the past I would have just taken their word. They are their own bad character witness.
Thanks for the call, Steve. I mean, again, there are functions. We talked about this, over the last week with Kevin Brock and others formerly in the FBI. There are functions that the FBI performs that that need to be performed by law enforcement, federal law enforcement. But I think one of the lines of demarcation is between, you know, cops and robbers catching the bad guys, Elliot Ness type stuff, and national security. The national security function, this is where it seems to me they've been hyper-politicized and have fallen down on the job. And again, it's not just with respect to who they're targeting. It's also the opportunity cost we pay for the politicization. What's the opportunity cost? Well, it was mentioned previously, and it was mentioned by Terry Turchi, the former assistant director. We played his interview over the weekend yesterday. So at the same time, you're looking at potentially prosecuting a former president for, you know, misdemeanors relating to the handling of classified information, which is, again, if you take the FBI at face value and what they were looking for and what their interest is, not that you should, but if you do, because this is what they've presented, then that's what we're talking about. Meanwhile, you got six or seven dozen individuals on the FBI's terror watch list who got into this country through our poor southern border, and the FBI doesn't know where they are.
Prioritize, please.
Mike in Union.
Hey, good morning. Three cases. Richard Jewell, the anthrax debacle, and I forgot the other one. But anyways, you know, is this a preemptive strike on the Durham report that may or may not ever come out with the FBI's involvement with the so-called, dossier? I mean, is that ever going to come out? What do you think, Dan?
Well, it's a good question. Thanks for the call,
Mike.
Glad you
didn't hold your breath waiting for it to come out.
Well, it's not going to come out before the Danchenko prosecution. Remember, you've still got the Igor Danchenko trial to be had. And then depending on what happens there or what happens, you know, in the run-up to the trial, if they were able to strike a plea bargain, for example, then is there anywhere that Durham goes from there? I don't know. I don't think it's clear. It seemed to be, based on court filings, he was laying out something that was more broad than perhaps originally believed, that he was just going to get some low-level people like the Sussman, who obviously was acquitted in his perjury trial, and some of these bit part players. But we don't exactly know. And unlike, the Mueller independent counsel, that team, unlike the Department of Justice under Merrick Garland, not a lot of leaks coming out of the Durham operation. So it's very difficult to divine. But you can't expect it before that Danchenko prosecution. I'm pretty sure of that. David in Lansing.
Good morning. The timing of this raid stinks, and many people have said that. Because, in my opinion, this is a cover-up of the one-year anniversary of the largest military blunder in modern American history. It was done by Biden. The elections are coming up, and oil prices, by the way, are tanking from a recent high of $125 down to $85 a barrel.
Yeah,
and we're not still noticing this either.
So is demand, right?
Yeah, the reason is because the oil kings who love Democrats in power and hate Republicans in power, like Iran, Canada, and Venezuela. There's a long list of them. They want to. They did it with Clinton. They lowered it down to $14 a barrel right before the election. Yeah.
I don't think that's what's happening. I think that's thanks for the call, David. That's not fundamentally what's happening. What fundamentally is what happening is
people stayed home from summer vacations because gas was $7 to $8 a gallon.
Yeah, you're killing
in places like New York and California.
You're killing demand. I mean, you know, there's elasticity there, but I appreciate the call, Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper. Hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I want to talk about school, since it's that time of year again, and obviously that implicates COVID protocols. But just a quick postscript on our conversation about the FBI and what we heard Peter Strzok offer on the Ghastly Morning Joe program yesterday. You know, again, his claim is that absolutely you should trust the FBI. They don't target one side or the other. What you see is the, this is his words, what you see is the FBI going out day in and day out on a day in and day out basis, objectively investigating allegations of law or law breaking. Okay, so that's his statement. Just remember this text exchange from the Lovebirds, Page and Strzok, as memorialized in the DOJ Inspector General's report, Michael Horowitz's report. Lisa Page, I'm quoting, "Mr. Trump's not ever going, well, he, Mr. Trump, not ever going to become president, right? Right." Strzok, "No, no, he won't. We'll stop it. We'll stop it."
He's biased.
So, right, just, you know, balls and strikes, not targeting either side, just looking for serious lawbreakers.
And he's reassuring his lava that it's going to be okay, that we're going to stop him. We're using our position of power by working in the FBI to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, so just
form of flirting for Peter Strzok.
That's that exchange between those two is just something to keep on a laminated card for any time you run into somebody with Trump derangement syndrome as it pertains to this conversation about the FBI. And again, the left now fully embracing the FBI as a beyond reproach is really something to behold. But again, they don't have principles. They just have interests. I understand. All right, moving on. And it's somewhat the same conversation, whether or not the FBI should continue to exist, at least in its current form, whether the CDC should continue to exist in its current form. Our friend Carol Markowitz writing the New York Post, "Too little too late," referring to their updated guidance on COVID. "Dissolve the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention." What do you think? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today, 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender, Signature Bank.
I'm all in for that. Are you all in for that, Dan? I mean, they're so fraudulent and they have been so misguided for the past 2.5 years. And then in the last week, really, right before school starts, now they're changing everything again because they're realizing people are dropping out of public schools by the tens of thousands. And they're realizing what they did to kids was wrong. I mean, we had Marty McElroy on, and he said there's three large studies over the summer that proved the inefficiency of masks and vaccines.
Yeah, but that's not what they're saying. And they're not saying that they did anything wrong. They're not recognizing they did what they did to children was wrong.
But
there's
by
no
changing their policy, don't you think they're recognizing that something was wrong?
No, they're recognizing that we don't have the political support to sustain what we otherwise would be inclined to do. That's a very different thing than acknowledging wrongdoing. Even acknowledging mistakes, you can't get that, much less something more accountable from them. By the way, I love Markowitz. Finally, husbands, tell your wives it's on as the CDC permits us to come within 6 feet of each other again. I mean, so this is the point. It's laughable, this updated guidance, because they're talking to themselves. For the most part, outside of hyper-politicized COVIDian circles, people moved on long ago.
Oh, my God. You go to Utah and people are like, oh, what are you talking about?
What?
Masks? Safety circle spots? Come on.
Just updating.
Yes, what is
the current
news?
The new guidance suggests the new guidance says we're all Florida now. Mitigate your own risk. It's an
personal choice.
Individual approach. That may differ from community to community, but that's essentially what it is. Everybody should, which of course all these COVIDian politicians took as shall and imposed anything the CDC was uttering. But now they're basically saying, look, end test to say, so kids can remain in school if they're exposed to someone who's got COVID. Also, people without symptoms no longer need to be routinely tested, so stop the testing obsession. Individual approach is more or less it. But, you know, it will vary from locale to locale. In Philadelphia, first 10 days of school, everybody wears masks for some reason.
At CPS, they updated their guidelines yesterday. We all got emails. All right, so in keeping with the latest guidance from the CDC, our Test to Stay program is evolving for this school year. Moving forward, any student or staff member who's exposed to COVID-19 in school, regardless of vaccination, will no longer be required to learn or work from home from 5 days. That's good. But they'll be required to wear a mask in school for 10 days following exposure. And this is going to be enforced, and they're going to have contact tracers let you know whether or not you have to mask up for 10 days. In Washington, D.C., 40% of the unvaccinated black students are not going to be allowed in government schools because they still have a vaccine mandate. And here's the mayor who, when Douglas Blair asked her the question, you know, how could you justify what you're doing? This was her answer.
I don't think that number is correct. We have a substantially fewer number of kids that we have to engage with vaccination. And I explained why it's important. It's important for the public health of our students and that we can maintain safe environments.
No, it's important for them to be in school.
Well, and those numbers, by the way, the 40% of the unvaccinated black students, those numbers came from her office.
Yeah, 60% of black kids in D.C. age 12 to 17 have received a COVID vaccine regimen, meaning, of course, 40% are not. The problem is that you could go to the D.C. schools and you still wouldn't be able to solve the equation I just solved. So that, you know, I don't know if it gets better or worse in their school, but I take the larger point. Ross Douthat writing in the New York Times on this, CDC leading from behind as is their wont. The CDC has been consistently behind evolving scientific knowledge, behind the curve of COVID's evolution, behind how most Americans have already adapted. The new guidelines effectively acknowledge the way many Americans have been navigating the pandemic for some time, as I just said, because, of course, that's just observable truth. And back to Carol Markowitz's declaration that the CDC should be dissolved. If that is, in fact, the case with respect to the biggest public health moment in our lifetimes, most of our lifetimes, I would argue, certainly a government response in our lifetimes, then what is the point of the CDC? To be a pass-through for grant funding for research as so decreed by Tony Fauci or the next central planner to follow him? And we can do that without a massive, you know, you can distribute $40 billion without a massive bureaucracy. Not that saying that you necessarily should, but, you know, the topic of government funding of scientific research is for another day. The question is just assuming that we will do that, we will continue to do that in some form, which we will, trying to find cures for things and so forth. Is the CDC the best vehicle to advance that sort of research? Should the CDC be a repository of public health leadership when there's a novel virus that is afflicting the population and so forth? And based on their performance,
I don't believe a word they say about monkeypox.
Well, based on their performance,
the problem.
That's exactly the problem. And once a public agency loses the confidence of the people it was set up to serve, then you got a real problem. And that's where we're at with the CDC. There's no question. And by the way, it's getting worse. I mean, behind the science and masks and things, it's worse than that. Because it's also the things we're talking about, the things we know. What about the things we don't know? Like the long-term impacts of the vaccines. This was worth taking note of. The CDC removed a claim from its website that it had been making about vaccine safety.
Oh, boy. Can't wait to hear this one.
The facts about mRNA COVID vaccine section of the website. mRNA vaccines do not use any live virus. mRNA vaccines cannot cause infection with the virus that caused COVID or other viruses. And the other, they do not affect or interact with our DNA. mRNA from these vaccines do not enter the nucleus of the cell where our DNA is located, genetic material. So it cannot change or influence our genes. What they removed from the section about facts about mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. The mRNA and the spike protein do not last long in the body.
Oh.
Our cells, this is the claim they had been making until just recently. Our cells break down mRNA from these vaccines and get rid of it within a few days after vaccination. Scientists estimate that the spike protein, like other proteins our bodies create, may stay in the body up to a few weeks. Well, that's a big deal, because the spike protein produced by the viruses is far more dangerous in a great many ways than the spike from COVID itself. And, you know, without getting too deep into the weeds in the science, because frankly, it's, you know, beyond my knowledge, it's reporting on the suggestion about the importance of that claim or the lack thereof, whether, you know, is that claim true or not? And if it's not true, what are the implications? So, some medical professionals, public health professionals, epidemiologists suggest that the vaccines are highly CG enriched, and this is a strong reason to presume that having them linger around for longer periods of time will increase the risk of, accelerate, or maybe even outright cause cancer, heart damage, or other ill effects.
Oh, no.
So we don't know, and I'm not here to hype this thing and scare people, but it's something that now demands more questions. You were making this claim. You removed this claim. Why did you remove it? And what are the implications of this claim that you had made not being true? Yeah. The science is settled. The debate's over. Never is it? Never is. John in Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, you're rid of agencies because of three things. Number one, within the first few days, they could have figured out if it was spread by surface contact. They failed to do that. Within the first few days, they could have figured out if masks were warranted. They didn't do that. And the third thing, they're on record saying, oh, if you protest, you don't need a mask then, you're going to be safe. So, I mean, how could you trust an agency that can't even do the basic job of figuring those, first two things out?
Thanks for the call, John. Pat Lockport.
Yeah, good morning, guys. I like what that previous caller had to say, which is absolutely true. And another thing, they're masking children for how many months? And this disease is so horribly deadly. Well, I would like to know why in all of the tent communities that people live on the streets across the United States, this highly infectious virus didn't just get rid of all of them. We would have run out of body bags by now, for God's sake, if what they were saying was true. And the way they change things on their website, find new definitions for vaccine. Do all of them have brown eyes in the CDC? Because it sounds like they're surely all full of it.
Well, thanks for the call, Pat. Here's the thing about that, too. When you remove a material claim, you publicize it. You explain it. You don't wait for somebody to catch it and then have the questions follow. Say, look, we're revising what we understand about the risks and rewards associated with the vaccines. But they don't do that.
No, they try. They're sneaky about it.
It takes
a keen-eyed like yourself to figure it out.
Yeah, they tell the truth or they provide information other than that which they would like to provide only as a last resort. Always have to be pulled kicking and screaming to be transparent, to be honest, to answer questions, to address concerns, rather than if you disagree, then, you're a charlatan, which is their approach to people who take even if people take a pointed, I think you're wrong this. So what? You have a responsibility to come over the top and explain why you're not or why you think you are, the basis for this. The concerns that you have, the questions that we're still trying to address, and this is the best answers we have. Make a case and continue to update that case without having to be asked. You know why? Because that's your job. And they haven't done their job. By the way, on monkeypox.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to update you on this.
Okay. Is Benny still letting people come in? One at a time, or are they allowing two people in now?
Yeah,
the humidor room.
I think they're going to have to let one dog in at a time too.
Oh,
the first known case of human to dog monkeypox transmission has been documented in The Lancet. The dog caught caught monkeypox from its owners, a gay couple in Paris.
How did the dog catch the monkeypox?
I don't want to know. The greyhound developed an anal ulceration and lesions.
See, that dog should be removed from their house. Because you know what I know.
Yeah.
And this doesn't sound good.
Lesions was the name of my high school band. Or Depeche Mode cover band.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I want to introduce you to a new term. You may not have heard of it. It's important because you want to color inside the lines, don't you?
Well, you know, I want to be hip and with it.
Heterification.
Common spelling.
Heterification. For example, bachelorette parties at gay bars.
Okay.
Bachelorette parties. Apparently, some honky women like to go to gay bars for their bachelorette parties.
I went to Kit Kat for mine. Not really a gay bar, but they had transgender dancers.
And why did you do that?
I don't know. Because it was different, because I was young and dumb.
Good story.
Because it was something different to do, and we took a trolley there and then went to different places. But started out there for dinner. You have dinner, and then people dance. Not people, but transgender men dance. Not like, they're not flaunting it. They're just doing routines.
Well, they're not flaunting it.
Well, they're
doing routines.
They have better bodies than us. I'm like, how did that happen?
Like the Charleston, the back box stuff?
They do jazz. It's all about the jazz hands.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's more like the idea, oh, we'll just go out and have fun with the girls and we don't have to worry about men hitting on us or something.
Well, that's true.
Which is also hilarious. Like, right, women really, I know women hate attention from men. Yeah. Okay. Sure. Well, you go with that. Two researchers, Lori Essig, professor of gender, sexuality, and feminist studies at Middlebury.
Another reason why Dan Proft is single. Okay.
Vincent Jones, a professor of community health at York College in New York, write in the Boston Globe that things like the bachelor parties that Amy attended. Was that your first bachelor party?
Yes.
A bachelorette party? That things like Amy and her honky friends go to represent heterification. They are destroying, you are Uh-oh. Destroying LGBTQ safe spaces.
Oh.
Like gentrification, heterification occurs when people feel privileged to take over the spaces of others and buy space in a queer venue. Yeah. Many gay bars, they know, popped up after the white gentrification of Black and Latinx, because that is the proper term, neighborhoods. But heterification is different because it's an appropriation of not just space, but of culture.
Yeah. Very deep. I didn't know what we were doing was hurtful.
When you're singing along to some dude pretending to be Cher, you're making that an unsafe space.
How did you know? That was one of the routines.
Oh, boy.
Half breed. That's all I've ever heard.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Half breed.
Speaking of, by the way, the LGBT, this is LGBTQ, this study, and I mean, who am I to question the relevance of research from some August academics, but there is this hashtag and associated content that's trending on Twitter because of its apparent popularity. LGB drop the T.
Uh-oh.
LGB drop the T. These are lesbians and gays who basically say LGB drop the T, meaning drop the transgender. The T hitched, for example, here's one.
Okay.
The T hitched a ride a few years back, invited itself for dinner, trying to make out that it always lived here. It didn't. Pride marches, protests, and LGB rights happened without the T. I also remember I was there. I also remember the T wasn't. Yeah.
Because it used to be called just LGB. No.
Uh-huh. Well.
No, I always remember the T.
Oh.
But now these other numbers, or not numbers, but letters are confusing me. LGBTQP.
Yeah, it's always uncomfortable when the revolutionaries turn on each other, isn't it? Isn't that sad?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
So where's this all going? Just fun stories? No. No, it's going to a place that we've taken you before. We're going to take you again because it's getting ever more serious with each passing day. And this goes back at least to the Frankfurt School of the 1920s. By the way, the Frankfurt School that's much talked about or referenced in conservative circles, and a lot of people don't really know what they're talking about. You know, it was largely funded by these academics. Marcuse is the one that's normally mentioned, but Wilhelm Reich is more important. Funded by, well, Republican money. The Rockefeller Foundation.
Oh.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah.
You don't say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The sentimental barbarians of their day and to this day. But it was Wilhelm Reich, who's a psychoanalyst and a medical doctor. Yeah. Yep. Science. He coined the term sexual revolution because he knew Marxism begins, well, with atheism, but it is passed on through the family. Passed on through the family. You had to have the family break itself up. And the way you do that is by selling the sexual revolution, that all these things were good things, that autonomous man and woman are the highest order. And so you get into a family-free, God-free environment, and that's where scientism can take over, which it has. And these institutions that exist that act as a bulwark against the state, Reich, a big fan of the state, they can exist so long as they stay quiet. They can be a spectator. And, for example, what did we see most churches do? Not all, most churches do during COVID.
Shut down.
Quiet.
Quiet. Yeah, they didn't fight back.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 1 to 5%, I think, fought back.
You don't call into question those practitioners of scientism who are in charge. So that's where this at. So when we tell these stories, these ridiculous stories, these asinine research projects and papers out of places like Middlebury, you know, it's another $70,000 a year elite liberal arts school in the Northeast, and much more serious real world stuff than that. We're telling you these stories for a point. And this is something that's very hard to reconstitute, isn't it? The disintegration of the family. But that's what this is about. And it may not be purposeful. Some drag queen at Amy's bachelorette party is not thinking about breaking up everybody's family. I get it. But guys like Wilhelm Reich are. They have been for 100 years. And they just unleash and sanction self-destructive activities. And then all of the people that practice them, living their truth, impose their will on those who don't, or those who find their behavior self-destructive and try to suggest so, disagree. Then by the time you figure out what's happening, what do you have? You have a situation where you're not only intolerant if you don't embrace what I do, you're a bigot, you're cancelable, and you better shut up. And after you're done shutting up, now you better celebrate. And after you're done celebrating, now get ready, as I talked about with Cass on Friday. Jeannie Ives on Friday. Now get ready for all the loyalty tests, the endless march of loyalty tests. That's what they are. So I was talking to a guy, I think I mentioned this last week, talking to a guy after golf. He's like, yeah, LGB stuff. I mean, I get it. You know, older guy, 60s. I get it. Whatever, doesn't bother me. The T, that's what bothers me because of the puberty blockers and the mutilation. And it's like, I hear what you're...
Hysterectomies that they're performing.
And it's like, I don't even get it. And another guy says, "I what's with this pronoun stuff? I don't even get that. They, them." Right. You don't have to get it. The point isn't even to get it. The point is to pledge your allegiance to the movement. And you will be constantly challenged. You think that being LGB is good enough? It's not. Add the T. That's not good enough either. Now add pedophilia. You think I'm kidding?
Oh, it's coming.
Folks, my name is Miranda. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm a licensed professional counselor and sex therapist in Erie, Pennsylvania. And today I want to talk about minor attracted persons. And I want to talk about minor attracted persons because they are probably the most vilified population of folks in our culture. Oh, and most folks are making incorrect assumptions about them without actually knowing much about them. And those assumptions create harm for an already marginalized population.
Marginalized.
You may have noticed that I'm using the term minor attracted persons, sometimes abbreviated to MAPS, instead of the more commonly used term pedophile. And I'm doing this because the term pedophile has moved from being a diagnostic label to being a judgmental, hurtful insult that we hurl at people in order to harm them or slander them.
So
that's disgusting.
Listen to that argument and tell me how it differs from the argument they've made about every other marginalized population, every other redefinition of terms. It's the same construct with every argument, and now it's being applied to pedophiles. I'm sorry, MAPS. This is why it matters. At least if you think that something like mainstreaming pedophilia is a problem. Is there anything worse? Isn't that every parent's worst nightmare, that their child would be sexually abused? I would think. I mean, short of being murdered, dying before them, I would think. This is where this movement inevitably goes. It was always going to come here as soon as we unleashed it 100 years ago. Now it's here. Oh, and by the way, as I said, you can be silent or you can be participatory. And if you're silent, it's only until it's demanded that you're participatory. Boston Children's Hospital. Dr. Francis Grimstad, Division of Gynecology. This video about their gender-affirming care for adolescents.
Gender-affirming hysterectomy is very similar to most hysterectomies that occur. A hysterectomy itself is the removal of the uterus, the cervix, which is the opening of the uterus, and the fallopian tubes, which are attached to the sides of the uterus. Some gender-affirming hysterectomies will also include the removal of the ovaries, but that's technically a separate procedure called a bilateral oophorectomy. And not every gender-affirming hysterectomy includes that, and people who are getting gender-affirming hysterectomies do not have to have their ovaries removed.
The more you know, Rainbow. That's her describing the full suite of surgical options for transgender teens and young adults.
But she's smiling, like bragging that they've become the nation's first pediatric trans surgery center. And this is great. And this is something to be celebrated. That is irreversible. You can't get your fallopian tubes back. That woman is never going to be able to bear a child if she decides later on, you know, once her brain and her frontal cortex develops, and she can't get that back. That train has left the station.
Since kids are going back to school.
Oh, my God. That is, like, criminal. I can't believe they should shut that wing of the Boston Children's Hospital down.
Well, maybe it'll go the way of Tavistock at some point, the trans clinic in England that had to shut down because of bad outcomes for their patients. Now you've got 1,000 people suing that clinic. Maybe. Better kick the tires before you greenlight your child to be in charge of their
own body.
Well, in charge of their, just autonomous children in charge of what's goes on with their lives regardless of what mom or dad says. Really? What parent is really on board for that? Well, then step up and stop being complicit in these horrors, for God's sakes. And by the way, pay attention to what the hell's going on in your school. The kids are back. So exciting. Yeah. Football and whatever.
Elgin starts, so U46 goes back today.
GSA Network, this is the organization, nonprofit, multi-million dollar annual budget, 4,000 gender and sexuality alliances across 40 states. I know there's a GSA club at your school, your government school. I know there is. I don't care where you go. I'm talking to everybody. 4,000 gender and sexuality alliances across 40 states. The individual chapters operate in elementary, middle, and high schools. Often use the language of LGBTQ inclusion. You know, I think we just, they're going to add maps pretty soon. And anti-bullying in their public relations. But behind the scenes, as Christopher Ruffo writes at City Journal, they're left-wing radicals. Yeah, no kidding. But I know this is news to many. It certainly will be to the people who are not listening to this show. GSA Network's ideology follows the basic framework of radical gender theory. White European men created this oppressive system based on capitalism, white supremacy, and heteronormativity. And in order to fight back, racial and sexual minorities must unite under the banner of intersectionality and dismantle the interlocking systems of oppression. Blah, 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 blah. By the way, you know, just in terms of what you're thinking about when you wave the Black Lives Matter flag and you don't know that they're Marxists who want to destroy the family, isn't it interesting that organization had in its mantra, on its website, destroying the nuclear family? Same thing here, and everything else, all the other hallmarks of the civilized West. Well, so same thing with the GSA Network. You won't be surprised to learn. In its manifesto, abolition of police, abolition of borders and ICE, reparations to minorities, decolonization of native lands, the end of global white supremacy, also very anti-capitalist, the literature littered with references to anti-capitalism, leaders fantasizing about what life would be after capitalism falls. That's a quote. Elementary schools, middle schools, high schools.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM 560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Morning, Dan and Amy. Our friend Jason Hill, he's a professor of philosophy at DePaul. You've heard him on the show before. Perhaps you've picked up and read his books. If you haven't, you should. His latest, What Do White Americans Owe Black People? Racial Justice in the Age of Post-Oppression. He also wrote the book, An Immigrant's Letter to the American People. He's a Jamaican immigrant. And he is still vilified on DePaul's campus right there in Tony Lincoln Park in large measure for a piece he wrote about Israel back in 2019. Some of what has happened to him at the hands of his colleagues has made its way into a defamation and breach of contract suit. I have to get the status on that. And he's back in the news again after a colleague of his said that Jason Hill comes from a blank hole country. I remember when President Trump said
that about Haiti.
And that was,
he said, look at Norway, how clean they are. Now look at Haiti.
And that was evidence of white supremacy and patriarchy and Trump's ill manners and
calls for his removal implementing the 25th
institutional racism.
He's
and all
bombastic.
That. What about when it comes from the left against a conservative philosophy professor who also who happens to be black, Jamaican, who also happens to be gay? He's got a pretty good intersectional, and he's an immigrant, a pretty good intersectional score to be subject to those aspersions. Those are reserved for, you know, honky conservatives like me, but not so much. Not so much on a college campus, as we know from our friends who have different skin pigmentation, but the same philosophy of living in a society that respects free minds and free markets. And the free minds piece couldn't be a more topical issue after the assassination attempt on Salman Rushdie on Friday. Thankfully, it looks like he's going to survive that, but not unscathed.
You know, he's losing his vision in his left eye.
For more on what's happening to Jason Hill, please be joined by Jason Hill now, professor of philosophy at DePaul. Again, the books, An Immigrant's Letter to the American People, as well as his latest, What Do White Americans Owe Black People, Racial Justice in the Age of Post-Oppression. Jason, thanks for being with us again. Appreciate it.
Hi, Dan and Amy. Thank you for having me.
All right. So, I mean, this saga, 3 years, at least 3 years in, perhaps longer if you include all of the all of your transgressions against the orthodoxy at DePaul. But give us the latest here with the characterization of your homeland and where things stand for you on campus.
Well, the harassment continues. You know, an email was procured by during litigation with the university by my lawyers, and I'm going to call her name. She's a professor in the anthropology department. Her name is Nyla Ginger Hoffman, Professor Nyla Ginger Hoffman. Referred to my country where I was born and raised as an S-hole. We know what that means.
Yeah.
That I came from an S-hole, that my piece was garbage or something on that order. And this email was sent to, dozens, scores of my colleagues, which was horrible because, of course, it creates a very, very hostile work environment. These are people that I have to work with. These are service committees that I potentially would serve on, which makes it impossible for me to serve on these committees. Who wants Jason Hill, who comes from an S-hole country, who is writing these horrible things about the Palestinians, right, to serve on these committees? But look, her intent, as has been the intent of DePaul, is to create a very, very intimidating, hostile work environment for me. And the funny thing is that President Trump, she's a liar, because President Trump actually never did say that about Jamaica, let's be clear.
No, he didn't
say
that
about
Jamaica.
Haiti.
Yeah, right.
It was Haiti. But still, whatever, he shouldn't have said it, you know, and she shouldn't obviously have said it, but getting away with it.
Well, here's the thing about that. You know, this is an academic institution. This is an institution of higher learning, allegedly. And your response to an op-ed you don't like is to say, the author, it was garbage, and the author's from an S-hole country.
It's like saying my dad's bigger than your dad.
Sort of. I would think that, you know, these people who have much reverence for themselves in the hallowed halls of academia would be like, well, that's not how we do it here. We make substantive arguments in response to things we disagree with.
No, that's not the case. You see?
And I know.
Because my kind of speech doesn't fall under protected class of speech. It shows you that the whole diversity, equity, inclusion program is a bunch of malarkey, because it's not protected. There's only one kind of speech, as we know, that's protected speech. So diversity of thought, of course, is not protected. Intellectual diversity is not protected and is not appreciated as it might have once been in the old days.
So the way that
you sort of diffuse and neutralize this is by ad hominem attack, because I think what I wrote in the Federalist was sound, it was valid, and there were good points, and the way that you diffuse that is by point by point in a philosophic manner subject the meaning test, philosophic meaning test, and the way we adjudicate among truth claims is by reason and logic, but people such as herself and others have, you know, criminalized reason logic. So you go after the person. You say they come from an S-hole country, which is what Professor Hoffman has done. You attack me personally. You denigrate my character. You demean me as a way of neutralizing the arguments that I have made in my article.
Yeah, and again, I mean, just as, you know, the underlying article here that's 3 years old.
3 years old.
The moral case for Israel annexing the West Bank and beyond. And I mean, you go through the history of the region and you make the case, as the title would suggest, for Israel's right to that land. And so people want to disagree with it, But I mean, it's not like you just wrote some, vituperative screed against Palestinian people. It's like a geopolitical think piece. That's what it is.
Exactly. But that's how they sort of operate. If you don't adhere to orthodoxy, and they receive wisdom. You see, if I had been I'm a black man and I'm an American citizen, no, of course. But if I had written an anti-Israel screed, siding with the Zionists, there is no way on earth, Amy and Dan, as you know, this would have broken out into the sort of fracas that it has. I would have been lauded,
right?
Especially on DePaul's campus. I would have been lauded as a hero of the Palestinian people, and have been lauded as a hero of decrying what Israel is regarded as on that campus by many and on university campus as a genocidal apartheid state, which I have strongly defended Israel as not being a genocidal apartheid state, but as a wonderful democracy in that part of the region, which they hate. I mean, I said that in the article, and they hate that.
Right. Now, do you physically, like, have you, do you run into Nyla at school? Or are they, is everybody still teaching remotely?
I've never even met Nyla Ginger Hoffman. I don't even know this woman. I'm sure that she's contributed to a climate in which the following has happened. I walk on campus. I've been there for 22 years. I've dedicated my life to teaching my students, and I'm still going to be dedicated. I want to say this to my students. But I run into people that I have seen and I have known for 22 years, and they have nothing to do with me. They look at me. They look straight through me. They're cowards, obviously, and they're afraid of social ostracism and isolation by stopping to say hello.
Right.
But this is the sort of toxicity that is created when you send a blast email out to people, decrying and denouncing and demeaning me. No one wants to be seen or to be associated with me. So people just walk past me when I say hello. People I've known from other departments for over 22 years. People just walk past me as if I'm a complete stranger.
Well, and
there are about three people who say hello to me. Yeah.
And this is what, you know, the ironies always abound here, but all the talk about labels, and labels don't define people, and they only tell you a little bit about something, but they're the labelers, and that's all they know. I would bet you dollars to donuts that 90% of the people that you come in contact with who shun you have no idea didn't read the article, have no idea what the argument was, don't know
that it was from 3 years ago.
Don't even know exactly why it is that you have been banished from the kingdom. They just know that you have been, that you're a bad person because somebody told them you were, and that you're to be shunned. That's what they know.
Yeah, they're like obstreperous little children they're like mindless automatons who are just virtue signaling. It's good to be on the right side of history, in this case, siding with those who oppose me, and they virtue signal by just registering their opposition against me. But by obstreperous children, I really mean that. They're not just siding with the Palestinian Students for Justice, the young socialists, the young Democrats, all the students who took over that building on that day in April. But the faculty themselves who censured me behaved, and the faculty who have joined in censoring me and demeaning me are behaving like obstreperous little children, because they're not really using their minds and thinking for themselves. They're just a cabal, a phalanx of mindless individuals. And it's quite unfortunate that these are people who are in our classrooms, Dan and Amy, teaching students, or who ought to be teaching students the skills of critical thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love, to send students your way, but I can't in good conscience recommend DePaul any more than I can my alma mater. But I wonder what college campus life is like for you. Do you just sort of stand around in the quad playing ultimate frisbee with yourself, or how do you pass the time?
Well, I've been teaching online. In the spring, they've assigned me online classes. In the spring, I taught one class in person, and that was a weird experience because I'd go to my department. My chair is pretty cordial to me. There are a few people in my department who speak to me. And
which is
life
nice.
On campus.
Which is always nice.
Yeah, I have a few.
One or two people on campus will talk to me. It's nice. Yeah.
Life is very lonely. I won't lie. It's very lonely. It's very isolating. It's very isolating. It's very lonesome. I do have my students, the ones that do show up for class. Last year, this time, I was struggling to fill four classes with two students because, the faculty led a boycott against my classes. And so I had like three students allocated between two classes. This year has been much better. I have like 30-something students between two classes. So I do have my students to sort of.
And you're going to teach in person? You're going to teach in the classroom?
In the fall, they've assigned me two online classes. I don't think they want me on campus, but
yeah, that comes across, right?
And I have lower level classes. I've not, you know, since this whole thing has arisen, this fracas with the article, I have not, all my upper level classes, and including my teaching in the honors program, I've not been, my honors classes have been taken away, it seems to me, because I've not, I was teaching in the honors program for 9 years. And I've been teaching classes that I was teaching 27 years ago as a graduate student at Purdue University. Classes that DePaul third-year graduate students are teaching, those are the classes I have been teaching for the past 3 years. All my upper-level seniors classes that I took, you know, pride and joy in teaching that were very intellectually demanding, I've not taught those classes. So I'm teaching very lower-level introductory courses. Let me say that I teach those with the same sort of dedication and passion as I would an upper-level class, but it's just another way to be humiliated and to be sort of put in my place.
Right. Where does I know these things take a while, but where does the litigation stand? Is it still in discovery phase, or where are you?
No, well, we have a trial date.
For
the first week of November. So I'm all prepared to go to trial and fight. I'm quite strong, as you know, Dan, and not one to back down from a fight. I think they picked on the wrong person here, thinking that I would either resign or would give up and break. But that's just not going to happen. So the trial is November, first week of November, and I'm all ready and set to go and to fight for my rights, my First Amendment rights, and to seek claims against a hostile work environment and harassment. You know, I've been harassed, and that's what we're seeking damages for.
He is Professor Jason Hill, professor of philosophy at DePaul, author of An Immigrant's Love Letter to America, as well as What Do White Americans Owe Black People? Racial Justice in the Age of Post-Oppression. Jason, thanks for joining us. Keep the fight. Appreciate it. And keep us updated as you move to the trial phase. And also, you know, things that are not related to litigation, like your scholarship, too. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Dan and Amy. All right, thank you.
Thank Bye-bye. You. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Insert Democrat socialist here.
Runs the Democratic House floor for 30 plus years running. He's promising this and he's stealing that. Where can you get that kind of money? He's using your house like his own piggy bank. Gang. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois, but you can never keep up with the taxes. Oh, how it's always been the plan to have a taxpayer pay no doubt. Not a matter of if anymore, but when you're moving out. I said, when you're moving out.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. That theme music means it's time for our weekly confab with... Normally it's Ted Dabrowski from Wire Points, but we're going to his stunt double, Mark Glennon, who's the founder and executive editor of WirePoints.com, all things Illinois policy related.
And I wanted to talk to Ted because Ted is a Georgia Tech grad. I had some questions for him, but all right, I guess I'll have to text him.
Yeah, Peyton's going to be there for 4 years, so you got time.
So I got a slow roll.
You got time. Yeah, he'll be back.
Okay, thanks.
Mark Glennon, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan and Amy.
So let me start. We haven't talked in a while. So let me start with a global question for you, because it's one I'm sure you get as often as I do. Is Chicago and by extension Illinois, is it past the point? Is it past the point of no return? And if it's not, what does clawing back from the edge look like?
Yeah, boy. You know, I've asked that question to people in New York that were old enough to remember the days back there. And the best ray of hope I can tell you is that people there remember the 1970s when it was near bankruptcy, and they didn't know how it could come back, but it did. So I maintain some hope that there's so many natural assets here that are really world enviable. Fortune 500 companies, of course, the universities, museums, all the other stuff that we have to work with, the transportation center. But boy, it's these problems have mounted up, and most critical among them, I think, is that it's really you can make a good case that democracy simply isn't functioning in Illinois anymore. So even if the people rise up, as they finally should, I'm not sure the mechanism is there for them to overturn it.
Well, what does rising up mean? What does that look like?
Well, it, you know, voters would have to throw out the bums, you know, which should stop voting for the same people that have caused all these problems. That's the simple solution. That's what how democracy is supposed to function. But the system is rigged against them, you know, between rigged maps and rigged elections. I just wrote a long article about the Zuckerbucks phenomenon, which is gearing up again to distort this year's elections. We don't know how big it's going to be in Illinois, but I think Illinois could be a big target for that. Even if they rose up at the voting booth, it might not work.
Well, I have some good news of sorts. You have to kind of squint to see it. Chicago's murder per capita rate is only one third of New Orleans's, but it's six times of what New York is. Really interesting.
Wow.
Even despite what you hear about the disintegration of New York and other big cities, Chicago obviously among them, and you have smaller cities that, you know, by the numbers, particularly that one statistic, seem more violent. Of course, it doesn't take into account all of the other violent crime, which is material to the discussion. But even still, the Chicago to New York comparison, or Chicago to New York plus L.A., and yet our violent crime rate with one-fourth of the total population of those two cities is exponentially more.
Yeah, and actually, you know, shootings and murders, that's where there's been a bit of improvement over last year, still much worse than pre-pandemic, which is what you need to look at. And New York has done a little bit better job in controlling these things. And people have moved back into Manhattan and places in New York. They just surpassed their pre-pandemic average rents, kind of surprisingly. That's pushed up real estate prices so much there. We're far away from doing that, though.
And Matt Rosenberg over at Wire Points has been doing a lot of reporting on crime, too. And one of the seminal pieces we've talked about a couple times was a few weeks ago. Just the number of unanswered 911 calls. You're running at something like more than half of the 911 calls that were made in 2021 went unanswered. There's another story out about where police are deployed and in what neighborhoods, what times and in what neighborhoods where most of the murders, well, not most, but where the murders occur and the neighborhoods in which they predominantly occur. And it seems like there's a misapplication of manpower based on where crime is happening and where police are when crime is happening. So here again, this is not to disparage the rank and file, but it's to call into question the competency of the leadership of the department and the city.
Yeah, he's really done some fantastic work on that. And he showed, for example, the proliferation of crimes into neighborhoods where they haven't been before, you know, particularly carjackings and muggings. That is all over the city now. And it's often said now that the L is really just a transportation system for the bad guys to get to the other areas to commit their crimes. Shouldn't ignore crime in any neighborhood, of course. But the fact is that that's driving down the attraction of living in Chicago and working in Chicago in all neighborhoods. And that's there's no end in sight to it. We don't see any reforms coming from Lori Lightfoot or anybody else. What's different that they're doing from what it has gotten us into these problems in the past? Nothing.
And what about
But one thing I want to emphasize, too, you know, Chicago is an instrumentality of the state, as are all cities and towns. What has the state done to intervene in this? I mean, they got to take responsibility. They could, by statute or by action of the state attorney general, step in and do something. They've done nothing. The state is a partner in this failure.
Well, they've done something. The General Assembly passed and the governor signed the Safety Act, which we've been talking quite a bit about. That ends cash bail as of January 1, among other changes to how policing and prosecuting operates in the state.
Yeah, we'll be doing some writing about that. We're looking in detail at what it'll do, and it'll institutionalize the no cash bail prohibition. Sort of, we're going to have more criminals out on the street. This is a topic we're going to start paying a lot of attention
to. But it's when Pritzker signed it, and you know he hadn't read it, and I don't think any lawmakers did because it was the size of a Manhattan phone book. He said, "Well, we will be making some changes to it, but." The obvious change is to end cash bail, but that's not coming down the pipe. No one's authored any legislation, correct, to try and change it?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, not that it's gotten any traction. Perhaps a few Republicans have, but it's not going to get any traction. I think they're committed to these things. They want to hold the course on what's going on. And, Lori Lightfoot just the other day yelled, great, great job to our Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox, who's the primary source of the problem. They're holding the course, and there's not going to be any change until policy changes.
Oh, I mean, there are ideologues on this stuff. I mean, these are people that believe that no matter the crimes and no matter the frequency of the crimes, that the system is institutionally racist. This is what they say. You know, it's funny. We sometimes forget what people say because it tells you what they really mean. So when they say that the police are institutionally racist, that means that Lori Lightfoot is going to take an antagonistic position towards the police, which she has, by and large. When they say the justice system is institutionally racist and obsess about alleged disparities, which actually largely dissipate upon inspection in sentencing and so forth, you know, that is, they're setting up for something. They have a perspective that they're going to try to affect if they're in a position of authority. And now that they are, they're doing exactly what you would expect people saying that to do. I don't know why there's such shock and surprise about this. They don't believe that violent criminals should be institutionalized. They don't believe anybody really should be institutionalized, except maybe white supremacists. But you can commit as many, they can pass as many gun laws and then turn around and not enforce them when it comes to a certain profile of assailant. I mean, I don't think people understand the ideological nature of this. I think that it's like, oh, everybody wants the same thing. They're just trying to get to it different ways. Not exactly. No.
Yeah, dead on. I mean, they don't recognize the ideological nature of it. They are stone cold radicals. America is starting to figure out that people in charge in Washington are that way, but somehow it hasn't filtered down to attach to the people in charge in Springfield and in Chicago. On what issue have Illinois politicians, establishment politicians, ever disagreed with Washington? Nothing. They are exactly as bad as the socialist communists, I would argue, that are in position in many places around the country. And it's a deep ideological problem, and they got to be thrown out.
Speaking of communists, I mean, just to put this in some perspective, the violence. According to the best counts, 5,401 civilians have been killed in the Ukraine war since Russia invaded. According to a report from the Law Enforcement Defense Fund, 11 out of the 14 cities in America that have surpassed the Ukraine per capita murder rate. So just let that wash over you. We got 14 cities in America that have surpassed the Ukraine per capita murder rate. They're at war with Russian communists. Okay. 11 of the 14 cities that have done so, Soros funded county prosecutor.
Wow.
I mean, it's a pretty strong correlation.
Yeah, I would like to go through the numbers. We are going to attempt to do this, by the way, just to identify the differential between those Soros County prosecutor jurisdictions and other ones. You know, the country had a surge in crime in 2000, but it's been worse, as far as we can tell, in those Soros jurisdictions, obviously, and we're trying to quantify that. But there's no question those prosecutors, St. Louis has one too, and that spilled over into East St. Louis, are a big part of the problem.
Property taxes is a core issue for you as it is me. We got some good news the other day from Mayor Lightfoot. She's increasing property taxes, but not by as much as she would have had to if things were worse.
Yeah, she's giving us a break. So, I mean, but she's doing it during an election year, which is it shows how desperate she is, because you normally don't do that, right, Ted? I'm sorry, during an election year?
It could always be worse.
And all that tax increase is being devoted to pensions, of course, which is a topic that nobody talks about anymore. Lightfoot, you may recall, about a year ago, promised to force a confrontation over pensions to try to get it fixed.
Right.
And have you heard anything further about
that? No, I haven't. I've heard that rap before, though. I heard it a lot. To your point, and I guess the point I was getting to, right, it could always get worse, but I guess the question is how much worse does it have to get before that revolt that you were saying could happen, maybe, possibly, we'll see. Mark Lennon, founder and executive editor of WirePoints, WirePoints.com, all things Illinois policy related. Mark, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Take care, guys.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and I've said before, but it bears repeating after what we learned about the FBI's raid on Mar-a-Lago. The combination of bad faith and incompetence, it's hard to separate the two, but they cause terrible hardship when they're combined. Awful spectacles like this raid at Mar-a-Lago. And what I'm talking about, per the reporting of John Solomon over at Just the News, is the FBI's over-collection of information from Mar-a-Lago beyond even the broad outlines of the search warrant they were able to obtain. And this after the Wall Street Journal reports Merrick Garland reflected for weeks before ultimately making the decision to green light the application for a search warrant to conduct the raid.
Like he's some hero or something.
So this was
such a burden on his soul.
This was thought out, though, and there was prep for it, and yet this happened.
Yeah, listen, for the first time, we have confirmation that the FBI and the Justice Department believes it over-collected evidence when it was at Mar-a-Lago, meaning it collected evidence that was not covered by the search warrant. Tonight, I have confirmed from two different sources that the Justice Department called President Trump's defense lawyers today, confirming that they did take his three passports. They are making arrangements to send it back, saying they are obligated to return it because it's outside the scope of the subpoena. They have also informed the Trump defense lawyers, the Justice Department has, over the last few days, that there's likely privileged materials that the FBI collected that now has to be segregated and returned to the president. Those privileges could be attorney-client privilege or, more likely, executive privilege. Now, this is remarkable. I talked to a lot of FBI people today who told me this warrant was already remarkably broad. They basically go in and get anything that looked like a presidential record. To then collect something like a passport, which most agents can recognize pretty quickly, or privileged documents, raised concerns among career FBI officials. You're going to see some of them quoted in my story tomorrow about just how this raid was conducted and the sort of lack of precision that was carried out during this raid.
And it also reinforces exactly what Trump said when he had made sort of oblique references to attorney-client privilege and executive privilege, and the attorneys were attempting to get some of the documents back. So you're treated to that in combination with the full court crisis comm press by the D.C. core to protect the shield of the FBI, if you will, from a PR perspective. No less than a Peter Strzok, he of the Strzok Page Lovebirds, on Morning Joe yesterday talking about his former employer.
Well, Joe, absolutely the American public should trust what the FBI is doing. You know, what's funny is I think back the year and a half that I spent with the team looking at Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server, there was no concern. There was no outrage on behalf of any Republican as we used search warrants, as we went out and did a very invasive investigation to try and get to the bottom of what she did or didn't do. So it's not that the FBI is targeting any one side or the other. What you see is the FBI going out on a day-in, day-out basis, objectively investigating allegations of law. It just so happens that the only thing that tends to come up in the right-wing ecosphere, whether in the media or on the Hill or from President Trump, are those things where they take a personal affront because it directly impacts them. There's absolute silence when the FBI is investigating former Secretary Clinton. There's absolute silence when the FBI is doing things that isn't targeting them. So I think this is a one-sided narrative that has been developed and amplified, particularly by President Trump.
Texts between Lisa Page and Peter Strzok, just one exchange, because yeah, all you need is one. This is from Inspector General, DOJ Inspector General Michael Horowitz's report. Lisa Page, Trump, he's not ever going to become president, right? Right. Strzok, no, he won't. We'll stop it. We'll stop it.
Reassuring his lover that it's going to be okay.
And he's on Morning Joe as if all of this has never occurred, which he's gotten a lot of help to sort of push it into the vast recesses of the public mind. But these people, McCabe on CNN or MSNBC, Strzok, they can be excoriated by the Inspector General of the Department of Justice for all of the, at minimum, professional failings. And then they turn around and they're the PR flax for the FBI. As Dan Henninger writes in the Wall Street Journal about the swamp and the prospect of draining it, invest in sump pumps because it's flooding into the countryside. Dan Henninger, deputy editor of the Wall Street Journal's editorial page, joins us now. Dan, thanks for being with us again. Appreciate it.
Good to be with you guys.
So what about, I know you wrote about it, but even since the column I just referenced, there's been a few things that have transpired. Merrick Garland's statement without questions, the unwillingness to make public the affidavit, laying out their case for probable cause to get the warrant in the first place, and then this PR campaign that's being done to do damage control for the FBI.
Yeah, well, we will get to Merrick Garland in a second. Let's just settle for a moment on the Peter Strzok piece that you just played in the context of what is going on right now with the Mar-a-Lago investigation. After Donald Trump was inaugurated, the Russian collusion narrative started based on the Steele dossier, right? You recall all that? The FISA warrants, the investigations that the FBI carried out, rolled forward into the Mueller investigation. One may ask, did Donald Trump create that controversy? No, he was just inaugurated president of the United States and suddenly found himself engulfed in this presumed Russian collusion narrative, the idea being that he was a Russian agent. Stories ran, we all read them, weeks. Months after months after months, full of anonymous sources. Now the present. Did Donald Trump take those boxes himself out of Mar-a-Lago with the FBI? No, the FBI showed up and took them. And now we are again engulfed in an enormous controversy surrounding Donald Trump.
But they could have subpoenaed them, right?
They certainly could have subpoenaed them rather than create this morass that we find ourselves in. Bringing us to Merrick Garland, and I think there's an important distinction to be made here. We were given to believe that this FBI raid was about the apparent fact that there were highly, highly classified and sensitive documents inside that room at Mar-a-Lago and that the national security agencies wanted them back in Washington. We can argue about that, but presumably, they went down there, got this material. The highly classified documents are now in the possession of the government. That's one thing. The other side of it, though, is, as was raised in the Wall Street Journal story that you just mentioned, is Merrick Garland actually looking for evidence that Trump created, that Trump committed some sort of criminal act, either related to January 6th or possibly to the Espionage Act and the handling of classified material, which personally I think is preposterous. Mm. But what is it anyway? Is he looking for evidence that Trump committed a crime, or were they simply wanting to get this highly sensitive material back? And Merrick Garland just isn't being clear about that, and I think he owes it to the American people.
Well, right, and if it's the if the truth is that they used the classified, the alleged classified documents in his possession, the prospect of the Espionage Act as a predicate to really do a fishing expedition on 1-6, then they're operating in bad faith. I mean, that's not the representation they clearly made to the court. And so that's why he has to explain it. What is it you're exactly trying to do here? And as you say, about the raid that happened, you wrote, this should never happen in the United States, end of discussion. And people would say, but wait a second, Dan, that he could have mishandled classified information. That's a crime. So he can't be above the law. He needs to be treated like any citizen would be treated.
Well, the material was there. The FBI came and got it. So we know that whatever they were looking for was inside Mar-a-Lago. I think the Justice Department has to somehow explain what happened between the end of their negotiations with Trump's lawyers on June 3rd and the 8 weeks in which nothing happened until they carried out this raid. Presumably, we may assume that Trump and his associates themselves were not going to begin carting documents out of Mar-a-Lago to hide them somewhere or dump them into the ocean. So, as Amy was suggesting, why not issue a more intense subpoena? They could even have gone public with this controversy if they wanted and set out the parameters. But invading a former president's home, I still maintain, is just completely out of bounds. But it has brought us to this incredibly divisive point.
So, thinking about the politics of this, and so this is sort of a test of how cynical one is. I mean, is it possible? I mean, they clearly want Trump front and center in this cycle and perhaps the next. And this is one way to do it. And one wonders if somebody like a Merrick Garland or a Christopher Wray, for that matter, would be witting or unwitting dupes for that political play.
Well, exactly right, Dan. Why shouldn't a lot of people, upwards of 50% of the country, the way we're divided, why shouldn't they come to that conclusion? We have been down this road so many times before. The Democrats clearly want Trump front and center as a foil in their election strategy. I mean, heavens, they were out there during the primaries running ads promoting the Trumpian candidates explicitly because they were the ones they wanted to run against. So now they've got Donald Trump himself elevated in the middle of a presumed controversy over alleged criminal behavior, and Washington, the Department of Justice, is saying it's going to take quote unquote months to go through these documents. Months meaning it runs straight through the midterm elections. Of course, people are going to conclude that it's all political.
Yeah, and then after the midterm elections, then they might release or they may never release. Do you have any more information on who might have been the mole inside Mar-a-Lago? Because I saw yesterday Donald Trump's estranged sister, Mary Trump's, believes that it's Jared Kushner.
I doubt that. I think that's very, very unlikely. You know, I saw Lara Trump on Fox several days ago, who had the same question put to her. I had to admit, she's quite articulate in defending her father-in-law, but she seemed pretty taken aback by that. She said, I don't know whether I'd go there. That didn't make a lot of sense to her. And it doesn't make a lot of sense to me either. Maybe a Secret Service agent or somebody like that. But I find that one just hard to credit.
Yeah, I mean, it's, again, the skepticism.
I don't think he needed a mole to raid his house.
Well, though, you have to apply skepticism everywhere, including to, unnamed sources that media outlets use to advance these stories. I mean, because that same Newsweek story that identified the mole, Dan, also suggested from those unnamed sources
that Garland, DOJ, FBI, surprised by the blowback from this raid. How could you not anticipate the firestorm that something like this would create?
I don't, it seems impossible to me. I mean, that would be the political tin ear of all time.
Yeah,
so Attorney General Garland just stands there maintaining no one here but us objective investigators yeah. following the law where it leads us. Man, you're in a situation where more than half the country simply doesn't believe that, which is not a good place to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the other part of it, too, is all the discussion now that was reserved for sort of esoteric academic corners now is coming front and center, like for general public discussion. Should the FBI continue to exist? Should we carve off if Republicans take control? You get a Republican in the White House in 2024. There's some law enforcement functions maybe that they're still proficient at with new leadership, like the cops and robber stuff. But you carve out or carve off the national security piece of it because it's too hyper politicized, or I mean, you know, defund CDC, defund FBI. I mean, these are the conversations that are happening in the public square right now.
Yeah, and I think there will be serious conversations. The FBI is an important American institution. We need something like the FBI, but we also need public confidence in an institution like this. And if public confidence falls too far, the idea of reconstituting these agencies may be worth thinking about. It would require certainly Republican control of the government to do that. But something like that, I think, is inevitably going to be on the table.
He is Dan Henninger, deputy editor of the Wall Street Journal's editorial page. Dan, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Great to talk to you guys.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I was referred to this interview the other week. We talked about it in part. Was not familiar with this gentleman before that interview, but intrigued by some of the claims that he was making about COVID vaccines, given his expertise in the area. Dr. Richard Fleming is a nuclear and preventative cardiologist, and in this interview, just play one snippet of the exchange per one of the claims that piqued my interest, you'll first hear from the interviewer, and then you'll hear from Dr. Fleming at the end after the setup.
Listening to people tell me that they're Mr. Science or Big Pharma saying that it's all about the science, or anybody else saying it's all about the science, I'm seeing a tremendous lack of actual science integrity and interrogation of the science, because when you go into the documents, the EUA documents, and you do the science, you do the interrogation of the data to see if it's really different, you discover it's not. The data is very clear. The science is very clear. The vaccines have not done anything to reduce COVID cases or deaths.
For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by the aforesaid Dr. Richard Fleming, who's a nuclear and preventative cardiologist, a developer of both the Unify theory of vascular disease and the quadratic blood flow equation for coronary flow reserve, which, Amy, I know you did your thesis on at Iowa. Yeah.
That was our secret.
Yeah. Dr. Fleming, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
So we played that clip for Dr. Marty Makary, the point about vaccinations, particularly the point not preventing infection. I think we know that's past post. But the idea that we're still hearing that the vaccinations do reduce serious illness and death, and what you just said there is the evidence says otherwise.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. You just have to do the reading. And apparently, just a lot of people have not done that. These EUA documents, the emergency use authorization documents, and they're posted on my website on FlemingMethod.com. You can go there, read them. Everything's free there. There's no desire to earn money off this. It's a desire to educate people and make them aware of real science as opposed to Mr. Science's perspective. And if you go read those emergency use authorization documents, Pfizer, Moderna, Janssen, which is the one everybody refers to as Johnson & Johnson. And you do what a scientist does. You look at the numbers and you statistically analyze them, a special math method for saying, am what I looking at really something that's different between the groups? You find out there's no statistical benefit for the vaccines. And this is based upon the original work that was done and the original variant that was floating around the Wuhan HU1.
So when Macri says, well, you know, I mean, he didn't dismiss what you said out of hand, but he said, I don't think we're there yet. I don't think we know yet. I don't think we've got enough data yet. What is he allegedly missing?
The data.
Okay.
I mean, there was enough data right up front that we should never have started using these without some type of evidence that we had something that was effective. And if you look at all the data, all the clinical studies from the United States, from Scotland, from the UK, from other countries, from Denmark, from Israel, you name it. If you look at what they're seeing, you know, these vaccines have really done a couple of things. First off, they have encouraged the virus to mutate, and it's called pressure selection. Same thing as when you give antibiotics too often and they quit working. So what we did is we demonstrated if we went after a particular part, the spike protein of Wuhan HU1, and we vaccinated people for that, what we did is we essentially turned the people who got vaccinated into asymptomatic carriers, and we promoted the virus to change. And the evidence shows us from the gain of function research, I know Fauci hates this, but there's a day here coming that in court that we're going to hear about that. That's what the indictments are all about, that Dr. Fauci, as well as the others, are going to have to fess up to the fact that this approach has done more harm than good. And they used a panic, run amok approach to push something out there with the goal of having a product, but it's not a product that works.
But wait. If it saves one life, I mean, they pushed this so hard and they sold the American people that this will work. If you take this vaccine, you're less likely to get it. If you get it, it won't be so severe. And more importantly, at the time, they said, if you get the vaccine, you won't spread COVID to others.
Right. Well, there has never been a vaccine in the history of vaccines that prevent people from getting infected or spreading it to others. I mean, the whole purpose of vaccines is to expose you to something before you get it, so that when you get it, you react sooner, you react faster. So understanding that means point blank, vaccines do not prevent you from getting infected. And if they can't prevent you from getting infected, they can't prevent you from passing it on to the next person. I mean, this is basic fundamental science, immunology, infectious disease, whatever you want to call it. There has never been a vaccine that prevents a person from getting infected or spreading it to others. And all you have to do is look at the President of the United States and the head of NIAID and say, wait a minute, they got vaccinated twice. They got boosted. They even had to take Paxlovid twice, which I would argue is a bad drug to be taking based upon what we learned from HIV. And, did they get sick and have more problems? Yes, they did. Now, Fleming, me, I have not been vaccinated. There's no evidence to be vaccinated by these vaccines. I've gotten sick twice in January of 2020 and in July, August of last year when someone was kind enough to share Delta with me. And at 66 years old, I am. I recovered much faster than these gentlemen did, being double vaccinated and boosted and treated. It speaks for itself.
So two things. Well, I want to go back. You made some mention of what the indictments are going to show. What indictments are you speaking of?
All right. So we have, for 2.5 years, I've been working on not only the virus and the disease and treating people and those that have been vaccinated, but I've looked at with a number of colleagues where these viruses came from. And note I use the term viruses because the evidence from the PCR testing, when done properly, shows us that three viruses that were built by Ralph Derrick at the University of North Carolina and Chi Zhang Li at the Wuhan Institute of Virology that received funding from Peter Daszak at EcoHealth, who received his funding from Dr. Anthony Fauci and the Department of Defense, that three of the viruses that they built matched the PCR data. And so what we have is two decades of evidence that shows that Anthony Fauci and a number of other people have violated federal law in that they have violated treaties that we signed as a country that said we would not participate in the development of biological weapons. Now, that ship has already started sailing. As much as Anthony Fauci and the others would like to put it back in the bottle, you know, this cute little response that he has that he just did at the Fred Hutchinson Center in the last couple of days, where he chuckled and said, yeah, he built it in his kitchen. This flippant attitude of his and this disrespect for Senator Dr. Rand Paul, who has under oath had Fauci say there was no gain of function research. Well, part of what we show in the documents for indictments for these individuals is the actual patent that shows that NIAID, you know, Dr. Fauci and the federal government paid specifically to have research done to change the spike protein on coronaviruses to make them more infective. We have the evidence to prove that these guys violated federal law and state law.
And have you been in contact with any law enforcement agency that has any interest in this?
We have communicated with several attorney generals of the state. And so here is where we're at right now. After 2.5 years, people have said, what can I do? Well, here's the problem. This gain of function is what led to this whole plethora of problems. The gain of function and the release of these viruses resulted in the quarantining of people, the shutting down of businesses, the shutting down of schools, the shutting down of churches, the inability of people to have friends and family gather in their home without being turned in by other neighbors, the interference with the practice of medicine, the forced vaccination, all of that is the direct result of this gain of function. So where we are at right now is, if you don't like what has happened and you don't want to see more of the same, which if you're paying attention, you will see more of the same is coming. The CDC declared Dallas is a red zone. The schools in Los Angeles are masking back up. The legislature in California is reviewing passing laws that state that children may be vaccinated without the consent or knowledge of their parents. If you don't like that, then we have to stop this. And to stop this, it's more than just me standing out here yelling and screaming or giving you information. The opportunity is now here for the general public to take action. There is a website that has been put together called 10, the number 10, followed by the word letters, letters.org. That website, 10letters.org, allows anybody to go in, enter their address, their name, their state, and generate a cover letter that will be directed to the attorney general of their state. Now, right now, Illinois, we just started this about a week ago. Illinois is the third, we have the counts of this, is number three out of the 50 states for people already responding to this. So apparently people in the state of Illinois are getting on board as rapidly as the people, because it's Texas, Florida, and Illinois. Those three states right now have the most numbers of people who have gone onto this website, put in their information, and you can, if you don't want your address to show, there's a box to click, but you can download a cover letter. You can then download a letter for indictment, which has all the information signed by myself, Dr. McCarron, who's the world's premier expert on rhesus macaques and prion diseases, Joanna Dehner, who is a physician from Germany, Charles Rixey, who has the military documents to support this and is a former U.S. Marine military instructor for weapons of mass destruction, and Andrew Huff, who was the vice president at EcoHealth, who is now on our team providing the evidence for the sources of funding going to EcoHealth and the laws that were violated. Everybody has signed it. You can download that 5 to 6 page document, send it in. If you want to download my 116 page CV, go for it. But and then share it with 10 people.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So I want to get your reaction to something else. This removal of a claim about the vaccine that was done by the CDC on their website, the claim that they quietly removed about the vaccine was this one, and I'm reading from the previous post. The mRNA and the spike protein do not last long in the body. Our cells break down mRNA from these vaccines and get rid of it within a few days after vaccination. Scientists estimate that the spike protein, like other proteins our bodies create, may stay in the body up to a few weeks. That claim has been removed. And the suggestion by some is if that claim is no longer true, then because the vaccines are highly CG enriched, there is reason to presume that having those spike proteins linger around for long periods of time will increase the risk of or accelerate or even outright cause cancer, heart damage, and other ill effects. What do you say?
Well, the CDC has done a very good job of collecting data for us, and we showed in the presentation that the excess deaths that have occurred since the release of these viruses and the vaccines show inflammation and blood clotting, which is the theory that you presented first that I came up with in 1994, where I also pointed out that viruses and bacteria can cause these diseases, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, cancer, high blood pressure. Get the picture? We've known this since 1994. They developed a biological weapons in this gain-of-function virus. The vaccines that code for the biological weapon are therefore also biological weapons that were produced. We have known since HIV, when I was a medical student back in the dark ages in the early 80s, that viruses can get into your DNA. That's called reverse transcription. We know that this virus does. I have on my website, FlemingMethod.com, two studies that were published previous to the one that everybody has recently heard about with liver cells, but two studies that showed that the virus can reverse transcribe or get into your DNA. I mean, we are designed to allow that to happen. And that information of itself tells you that, like HIV, this is something that can stick around for a long time and keep making its spike proteins. And we know that in addition to the blood clotting and inflammation causing all the diseases I mentioned, Dr. McCarron in Japan pointed this out right up front, that the spike protein produces prion diseases and gets into the brain and produces diseases like mad cow disease, Alzheimer's disease, and a variety of other neurologic diseases. We are seeing this. The CDC shows that there's more than 77,000 excess deaths that have occurred in a year and a half following the initiation of these vaccines. And it's occurring across the board ahead of schedule. The heart disease, the cancer, there's evidence that, you know, all these inflammatory thrombotic diseases that I talked about back in 1994 are the excess deaths. They're already showing up. We know that it interferes with protective mechanisms for cancers. So none of this is any longer theoretical. You know, it's kind of like I refer to my theory in 94 as a theory because it's mine, but it's the accepted fact about how this works.
And the CDC
is in our face.
And the CDC removing that claim and doing so quietly without explanation, you take that as a concession as to the accuracy of what you're saying.
That is a recognition that they don't want to have that on their website because they will someday have to be accountable for that, won't they? So if they just quietly let it go into that good night. Yeah.
Wow.
There's a lot of very, if you watch them, very quiet activities going on. Be careful when it's too quiet. Watch what's going on.
Dr. Richard Fleming, nuclear and preventative cardiologist, his website, you heard FlemingMethod.com, FlemingMethod.com. And the communiques with state attorneys general, 10letters.org is that website. Dr. Richard Fleming, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's morning answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.